Welcome to the GenCast Network. Created every Thursday, GenCasts feature the latest biotech news of the week, plus compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders.
This week, Gen's editor John Sterling talks to Dr. Bruce Litman from Pfizer about research in translational medicine.
Dr. Bruce Litman is Vice President and Head of Global Translational Medicine at Pfizer Global Research and Development. Trained as an internist, rheumatologist, and immunologist, he has become an expert in biomarker R&D. Dr. Litman, I've seen a number of definitions of translational medicine. What do you mean by the term?
Thank you. I believe that translational medicine can best be defined as the integrated application of a number of innovative pharmacology tools, including biomarkers, clinical methods, clinical technologies, novel study designs, etc., to improve confidence in human drug targets and increase confidence in particular drug candidates, to understand the therapeutic index in humans, enhance cost-effective decision-making during exploratory development, and through these, really impact phase two success.
Okay, now you mentioned biomarkers, and I'd like to know what role specifically do biomarkers and other types of pharmacodynamic data play in translational medicine research?
Well, as you know, biomarkers are essentially pharmacodynamic measures of drug response in many cases. In the case of translational research, they sort of act as the Rosetta Stone, if you will, that allow one to translate animal knowledge into humans and vice versa. In other words, the pharmacological activity of drugs is much more translatable between species than, say, exposure, because similar exposures may have very different effects, and there may be very different selectivity effects, et cetera, of drugs in different species, different potencies. So the best equalizer, if you will, is looking at the pharmacology through the use of biomarkers. And so these are used for PK/PD modeling to predict how much pharmacology is enough to really be testing the target before starting a study in patients. And I would say that those are the main purposes. And translating preclinical data to the clinic, proof of mechanism or proof of pharmacology, and PK/PD modeling is, I would say, the major purposes.
Okay, and again regarding phase two, and I know this is a point you've made at a number of conferences you spoke at, what are some of the things that researchers can do to guard against phase two attrition?
Right. Well, it's actually more of a business case. So certainly we're trying to guard against phase two attrition by being sure that when we start phase two with a new compound with an unprecedented mechanism of action, that we're really testing the target. Because if we got a negative in phase two, we'd like to be able to say it's a bad target and never do another phase two study again with a compound that has that mechanism. So that's certainly one way, is to be sure that you don't fail in phase two because you really weren't testing the target you thought you were. But there's also a fair amount of work that can be done earlier to say that I want to get human knowledge that speaks to the validity of the drug target. And for that, I think we can really get involved much more earlier or much earlier in the drug discovery process and confirm that there is a linkage between a particular drug target and disease efficacy. So, if you view disease as really a phenotype that may have multiple different biological causes, both genetically determined, environmentally determined, et cetera. And if you have a target in mind, there's going to be a particular subset of subjects with that disease where you know that that pathway, that that target is important. So if we were to select that population and do an experiment in humans using biomarkers that have some linkage to outcome, I think we'll be able to much less expensively get rid of the bad targets and thus be left with a portfolio of compounds that have much more valid targets. And that, so in the end, that certainly improves phase two survival.
Okay, my next question sort of tails in a bit to what you just said. Obviously, translational medicine research has been one of the hottest areas of biotech and pharma activity recently. Looking over the past 5 years, what have been some of the most important advances that you've seen take place in this field?
So you're right. I mean, that certainly does lead into this this question, because I think picking the molecularly correct subjects, so to speak, to do the critical human experiments, it wasn't possible perhaps 5 or 10 years ago. And with the advances in molecular biology, understanding of the human genome, SNP mapping, haplotype maps, et cetera, understanding of pathogenesis of cancer and the importance of various pathways that can be specifically targeted, I think all of this really makes this new strategy possible. It wasn't something that we could easily do before. So I would say that includes quite a bit of new technology, not just molecular biology, but also imaging technologies, as well as laboratory-based and diagnostic technologies.
Okay, now turning towards the future, and again, talking about technologies and tools, what improvements in tools, technologies, and various approaches would you like to see to really move the field of translational medicine research forward?
I think I'm going to surprise you here, because actually I think that what's needed the most to move this thing forward is more a change in culture and getting people who are in the right places in pharmaceutical companies and biotech companies to take a less comfortable course than the old comfort zone of a traditional phase 1, 2, 3 approach, which is very expensive and has a huge failure rate. I think so changing the culture and creating customer demand through translational medicine groups in these companies, I think, is one approach that will work. The other is, in fact, the FDA, which is through the Critical Path Initiative. Changes such as the exploratory IND really facilitate this, because they offer pharmaceutical industry a less expensive course, a less resource-intensive course, to really get this human knowledge earlier. So I think those are really the most important things that have to be done and need to continue in the current direction. There's a lot of technology already out there, and I think we just have to learn how to use it. It's amazing what's available in silico, but I don't think that companies are spending the time to take advantage of all that knowledge that we already have.
Well, Dr. Litton, I do want to again thank you for your time and updating us on this really exciting area of translational medicine research.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, be sure to visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus, saying thanks for joining us, and be sure to tune in next Thursday.